We gave it everything we've got. But the voters chose another path. We are suspending our campaign. But hear me now. I am not suspending our fight for liberty.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10. Today is May 4th, 2016. May the 4th be with you. Get it? Star Wars? All right. Well, that's the last time I'll mention that, I promise. The day ahead looks pretty challenging. Already markets are not doing so well. I guess you could say the force is not with the markets. Okay, I'm sorry. I did it again. I'll stop. But let's go first to the market intel, to the WGN market desk today. The Dow futures already this morning are in negative territory. They have been triple digits. The Dow futures off 119 points right now. The S&P futures also lower. NASDAQ futures also lower. In Asia, all of the markets are lower. The Nikkei again losing about 3% of its volume and worth overnight, down 518 points. All of the markets except for the FTSE are lower today in Europe as well. What is going on? We're trying to figure that out a little bit. It's the global economy mainly. Chinese manufacturing is weak. Cut in Europe's growth outlook is fueling fears about the global economy. Also, a Citigroup report says weaker manufacturing in China and a cut in the Eurozone's growth forecast. Fueling of this global outlook, many are concerned about what they're calling a challenging future for growth recovery in Europe and in Asia. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrials fell about 140 points, or about 1%. The NASDAQ and S&P also lost ground. The benchmark U.S. crude oil fell to just about $43.50 a barrel. The dollar gained against the yen, and the euro dollar gaining again this morning as well. Major economic and business events scheduled for today. Several big economic reports due out today that could drive the markets. Commerce Department will release international trade data and factory orders for March, while the Labor Department releases productivity data for the first quarter. The Institute for Supply Management is also going to release its service sector index for April. Lots of things that could drive the market one way or the other after the opening bell later on. Also this morning, three people briefed on the matter say the U.S. auto safety regulators are in talks with Takata Corporation to add tens of millions of airbag inflators to what is already the biggest auto recall in American history. The people familiar with these talks say the government wants the Japanese company to issue a recall that could more than double the 28.8 million Takata inflators that already must be inflated and replaced. The purchase source requested anonymity because those talks are still underway. It has been a good first quarter for auto companies. Fiat, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, all of them reporting higher sales yesterday. Nissan through the roof, 12.8% in the first quarter. Fiat, Chrysler, and Google this morning announcing a deal to work together to more than double the size of Google's self-driving vehicle fleet by adding 100 Chrysler Pacifica minivans to that. Yesterday, President Obama honored the 2016 National Teacher of the Year at the White House ceremony. Hundreds of teachers from across the country were in attendance. The president says the teachers should be getting paid more and they should be honored more. This year's recipient, Johanna Hayes of Waterbury, Connecticut. Here's ABC News correspondent Megan Hughes.
Johanna, please join me to accept this award for America's educators, the Crystal Apple.
The top teacher's sweet reward. Johanna Hayes was celebrated for overcoming great odds as a teenage mother without any college graduates in her family. The president said she not only teaches high school, but models service.
She organized her students to walk for autism, to feed the homeless, to donate clothes, to clean neighborhoods.
Hayes stressed the need for more minority teachers. Megan Hughes, ABC News, Washington.
This is Teacher Appreciation Week, and this morning on the opening bell, Pam Rogeman is with us, the Academic Dean for University of Phoenix College of Education. Good morning, Pam. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me and letting me talk about how great it is to be a teacher and also to honor our teachers.
There's a teacher shortage. I was a little flip earlier when I said, wow, gee, imagine that. Teachers seem to be getting the short end of the stick in a lot of ways, in a lot of areas. Is that driving the shortage of teachers, that they're just not being appreciated enough?
Well, partly. I will tell you also, you know, speaking of that teacher shortage, in Chicago, 60% of the school districts are reporting a teacher shortage. They still have classrooms to fill this late in the year, and, you know, it's May. I think another reason for the teacher shortage is that the baby boomers, like in many professions, are just kind of aging out, and educator prep programs are having a hard time producing teachers to meet the demand across the nation. And it's not just in hard-to-fill positions like it used to be with math and science and special ed and in the rural school districts. It's really across the board.
We're talking with Pam Rogeman, the Academic Dean for University of Phoenix College of Education, on teachers and teacher training. This is Teacher Appreciation Week.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stocks fell again today after weaker Chinese manufacturing and a cut in Europe's growth outlook fueled fears about the global economy. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones fell 140 points to 17,750. The S&P 500 lost 18. The NASDAQ composite fell 54 points. Southwest Airlines has cut some fares, while Delta has raised some, a sign that the price wars that have defined the industry are ending, replaced by pricing based on market conditions instead. Federal safety officials are in talks with Takata to possibly add another 35 million airbags to the 28.8 million that already must be replaced. Under an agreement reached last year, Takata has to prove that its airbag inflators are safe or start recalling them in 2018. And Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew says reaction to his plan to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill has been overwhelmingly positive. He initially announced that he would replace the portrait of Alexander Hamilton on the $10 bill with the famous woman. Hamilton fans were furious. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. We're talking about Teacher Appreciation Week this week. By the way, thank you all of you teachers out there. Mary Vandeville, traffic reporters here as well with some questions. We're on with Pam Rogeman, the Academic Dean of the University of Phoenix College of Education. Pam, Mary and I were just talking during the break about this, and I said, you know, all of us are here in our jobs or lives because generally a teacher somewhere along the line inspired us.
Well, you know, we recently did a survey of 1,000 teachers across the country about their job satisfaction, and interestingly, 9 out of 10 said that they were really satisfied with their job, and over two-thirds of those surveys would recommend the job to somebody else. And you might wonder, well, what is the reason for that? And personally, I was a high school English teacher for 17 years, and I was not surprised by the number one response about this job satisfaction, because it quite honestly was the most fun job I've ever had to this date. But the teachers reported from the survey that the opportunity to wake up every single day and make a difference and have a positive impact in the lives of their students was the main reason that kept them coming back. And, you know, I think we can get caught up in the negative media and kind of those really exciting stories about the negative things that happen in the classroom. But really, it shouldn't overshadow that every single day teachers wake up with a really tremendous sense of purpose.
I think, Pam, a lot of people, I know a lot of millennium kids who have come out of college, have gone to their first couple of teaching jobs, and have quit already. And it's so discouraging to me because they went through the 4 years of college or more. And many of, you know, I've asked them, what is going on? Why are you quitting? And they are so disheartened, just red tape they have to go through with supervisors. Mostly it's not, they love the kids. It's never an issue with the kids. It's supervisors. It's politics, it's testing, and it's paperwork. They're so discouraged by all of that. What do you say to these, you know, these millennium kids to get them back into it?
Well, first I will tell you, I would say thank you for choosing to teach. Interestingly, 25% of practicing teachers today are career changers. So I think I would not be surprised if some of those millennials find their way back to the classroom. I do agree with you that the challenges and the complexities of becoming a teacher rarely get any publicity, and it is surprising. I personally think that challenge and that demand to be a lifelong learner and you know that continual growth that you have to have as a teacher makes it challenging and rewarding. But I do think also that we need to prepare our young teachers especially to say these are the kinds of things that you have to deal with. However, I do sense on a national level, parents, teachers, community members, even legislators, are saying, let's rethink this glut of testing. I really have sensed a shift. The standardized tests are kind of starting to be questioned, and people are saying, let's look at more performance assessments, authentic assessments. Let's really offer our kids the opportunity to do what we're teaching them, not just take a test on it.
Pam, is this shortage worse in one place of the country versus another?
Well, you know, I think it kind of follows the economy. Just from a national lens, we have seen that of course, the lower income areas and the rural areas are just harder to staff. And we all know that that kind of, follows the national trend. But personally, if I were to go back to the classroom, I think those are the exact classrooms that I would seek out because, like many things, the greater the challenge, the greater the reward. And if I'm going to spend my time in the classroom, I'm going to spend it with the kids who need it the most.
Is funding in all of the states, is it impacting any of this at all? Because here in Illinois, we obviously have a huge education funding problem. Is that driving any of this?
Absolutely. And I think education funding is way more complex. I mean, you know, personally, I'm living in the state of Arizona, and we have a special election with two propositions on the ballot right now dealing with state funding. And interestingly, again, it was a bipartisan effort with our teacher advocate leaders, like the Teachers Association leaders and our Republican governor. And so what that indicates to me is that both sides of the aisle just, you know, again, greater communities are saying we really need to focus on making our schools, getting what we pay for, putting some money into our schools and investing in our schools, because we all know that great teachers make great schools, and great schools are really the fabric of the community like they always have been.
And one of the things that we talk about a lot here on The Opening Bell is innovation and also investment. Both of these things are important. If we don't have good education, the investment idea is dead from the beginning.
Absolutely. And what I think, what I'm a huge proponent of, not surprisingly, is getting teachers at the table. And I think becoming a teacher right now is really becoming an education advocate. You're an advocate not only for your profession and for your students, but really, again, for your community. Because so much of the strength of a community, you know, it drives the housing market, it drives small businesses. If you have great schools, people move to your communities. And, there are a lot of options out there, but, you know, I'll speak again specifically from the state of Arizona. Over 85% of people still choose the traditional public school. We as Americans, really, we still rely on our public schools. And unless we have a concerted effort of, again, business leaders, politicians, parents, community members, unless we have a group effort to really improve public schools and improve schools in general, not just public schools, then we really miss the mark on strengthening our communities.
Pam Rogeman, the Academic Dean for University of Phoenix College of Education. You can read more about this survey online, and it is Teacher Appreciation Week. Pam, thanks for being with us. Thanks for being a teacher. Thank you to all of our teachers out there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:38 as we begin our Wednesday, and some ex-Motorola executives are involved with getting the fuel going for startups, hardware startups. Joining us this morning on The Opening Bell, Scott Catoon. Scott, good morning. Our innovation and startup expert in Chicago. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm well this morning. So Motorola, some of these guys are really smart guys, and it's kind of cool to have them involved in the startup world. What are they doing exactly?
Well, there's a couple things, and it depends on the perspective of who you are as to whether this is great or not. Motorola has been losing a lot of engineers of late, which is something that is rare to them. They usually retain a lot of their talent for a long time. And a lot of these engineers are launching a wave of new startup companies in Chicago. What's interesting about it is as you know, Motorola has been acquired and then sold and acquired and sold a handful of times since 2012. And it's even been rebranded. In fact, now it goes by just Moto. It's by Lenovo. It's not even Motorola anymore. what I think has happened is a lot of engineers have decided, listen, they're not even branding us. We're working on only in-house projects. We're not really having the freedom to participate in a lot of the cool things that are going on. And so as they're leaving the company, they're starting really cool companies on their own, and they're having to experience this startup freedom and the ability to create things that are really cool to them and not necessarily just a project that the company wants. The problem with that is, however, is that, like you would know with any company, is retaining the top talent makes it very difficult for you to compete. And I think that is a sign of either problem or opportunity in the future for large companies.
Especially for Motorola, because this is has been a huge employer in the Chicago area for so many years, and it would be sad to see that fade away on the vine and go away. But on the other side of this, having more startups is good, right?
Sure. I think it's great, and I also think it's great from a competitive side, right? I mean, you want to have the more talented companies, the more experienced people starting companies, the better the odds of their successes. So the more of these guys that splinter off who have got years and years of experience, the more likely that their companies are to stick around for a while. So I think it probably is good for competitive balance as well as for the economy. I guess if you want to balance that against the odds of losing some of the power that some of these large companies had, you're having a smaller batch of still quality companies cropping up in its place. What I would say, though, is very interesting is from an innovation standpoint, a lot of large companies are going to be dealing with this in the future, and that is sort of a combination of the gig economy where people kind of have side jobs on top of their main career. But it says a lot about large companies in a lot of different sectors. If you aren't going to have the ability for me as an employee to work on my own projects and to experience things that I can benefit, in other words, an equity sharing program or something, I'm just going to leave and I'm going to go work and do something on my own. And I think this might be a learning experience. I hope it's a learning experience for some of the large companies around, particularly the Chicago area, that they, if they want to acquire and retain the top talent, they've got to give them something to work on that's not just in-house.
And this is sort of a challenge for a lot of different sectors, too, because when you're focused like a laser on shareholder value and you're trying to please shareholders at all costs, sometimes you lose that innovation spark and that goal to, you know, find new things and let your employees do the kinds of things you're talking about. Well, Scott, what kinds of things are they working on? What kinds of startups have they gotten going?
Oh, they've got, I mean, there's literally numerous of them. The seems like the most common one seems to be wearables, but they've got things like LightPad, GeoBit, New Current. There's all kinds of little kind of tech tools. You know, the big push you're going to see in the next couple of, couple of months, I guess, is sort of a new push on what else can we do with a handset? What other things can we, you know, BlackBerry, the CEO was just on Bloomberg yesterday at the Milken Institute in LA talking about the fact that we've had such a sort of tap out from Apple and other companies on what we expect from a handset. It's just like every new iteration is just only a little bit better. So I think what you're finding a lot of these guys is popping up working on how can we like drastically change what our expectations are for the phone, for the handset. What is the next thing going to be? And a lot of these guys are working on what that next thing might be. And, you know, who knows? The next Motorola could pop up out of somebody who just left Motorola.
Yeah, and on May the 4th be with you, by the way, I want to reference Star Trek. Maybe it's time these handsets became tricorders and health machines, and, you know, maybe it's time we start thinking sci-fi.
Well, I think people already are. It's just a matter of usability and how much data and how many apps and what apps can do it. You know, I think Apple's trying to do that by putting the wearables together with it, but you know, we're running into sort of what's the next thing? People are getting bored, which is crazy.
I saw this story the other day, and I thought of you. Chicago Tech in the last month has raised $340 million, five biggest rounds, huge money.
Yeah, the Venture Summit was here, and I think, I want to say Spot Hero and two other companies raised like $30 million each.
Yeah, Groupon and Livongo were the other two,
yep.
I think, yeah.
Yep.
Is that unprecedented?
For this city, it is. I mean, I think you know, I've said this a few times, and when I interviewed Howard Tolman on my show, I think we talked about this pretty much at length, that the great part is it means that people are opening up wallets and they're investing in the really strong companies. The downside is, of course, that, you know, the more money that gets out, the more risk that gets out. So if those companies don't perform, you're going to see a little bit of a retraction, which is why, again, I think it's important for companies like Motorola to get involved and invest in these companies on their own and not let the talent leave and let angel investors be the only ones who capitalize. You mentioned the importance of paying back for shareholders. You know, imagine if these companies could participate in some of these new startups rather than losing the talent. Those shareholders would actually participate in more upside rather than less.
You would think so. Scott Catoon, Chicago-based entrepreneur, WGN Radio contributor, our in-house unicorn and great all-around great guy, at Catoon, K-I-T-U-N, on Twitter. Scott, good to talk with you as always.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 on the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures already down 100 points or more, off 113 this morning. The S&P NASDAQ futures lower as well. It's been a rough night in Asia and Europe. But for the commodity markets, let's turn to Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. And I begin this morning's report on a very sad note. Agriculture and the ethanol industry lost a strong supporter yesterday. The death of Marty Andreas, long part of the ADM family, going back to the last century when we called it gasohol. He was a strong supporter of the renewable energy industry. I often called him the Billy Graham of ethanol. I also lost a close personal friend who I had known and worked with for nearly 40 years. On to the markets yesterday, a big selling day in the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade, and it was primarily fund selling, call it technical or fund, whatever you want to call it. But it sent the May soybean contract down 15.5 cents, May corn down 12.5, and May wheat down 16.5. Of course, part of that activity in the selling was also the speed of planting this year's corn crop and pretty good weather reports from here in the U.S. Turning to livestock, third day in a row that we saw live cattle futures end the day higher, supported by their discounts to last week's prices for cash cattle. And the June cattle contract closed 57 cents higher yesterday in the trade. And if we get good grilling weather, then we could see more support from the beef and pork sectors of the market. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. 5:51 now here on the Opening Bell. Some other stories we're following for you this morning around the world. Currency redesign is happening in the U.S. You know, the Harriet Tubman story, the $20 bill, civil rights, suffrage, suffragette leaders to U.S. currency has been overwhelmingly positive, according to Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew yesterday. In an appearance in Los Angeles, Lew said everyone he has talked with and met with since this announcement has been positive. They've even stopped to talk him to thank him for the decision. Lew initially announced last summer he would replace the portrait of Alexander Hamilton on the $10 bill with a famous woman. But after Hamilton fans objected, Lew decided that the redesign should go large, and he proposed redesigning the fronts and backs of not just one bill, but three bills, the $5 bill, the $10 bill, and the $20 bill. AOL is looking to connect more with the public, so it's building a ground-level, public-facing studio in downtown Manhattan for live programming. It promises to use top technology to engage more with its audience, including shooting 360 and 360 degrees for virtual reality. The announcement made Tuesday as the digital giant AOL detailed plans to create more live programming across all of its platforms. Yes, AOL is still around. Also this morning in Italy, there's an interesting case that's made its way through the courts. In the U.S., we're all familiar with the temporary insanity defense. Well, in Italy, they may now have something called the homeless and hungry defense. Let's go live to the foreign desk this morning. ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers is with us. Tom, tell us about this case. Apparently, it involves a hungry man who stole food.
Exactly. Roman Ostryakov, back 5 years ago, of Ukrainian descent. He was in a supermarket, and he wasn't just there, you know, saying, I'm going to sneak some food out, and I got 10 bucks in my pocket. He had just a couple of coins. He had enough money for breadsticks, and that was it, and which he paid for. And then he shoved about $5, the U.S. equivalent of cheese and hot dogs, in his pocket. They found him. Prosecuted him. The initial case said that he would be sent to jail for 6 months and fined $115. Went to an appeals court. Now went to the top court, top criminal court in the land yesterday, and the judge threw it out. He says, look, the guy stole $5 worth of stuff. We've wasted all this court time, three different cases now. And he says, this man was destitute. And there is a clause, he said, saying if you need sustenance, if you need nutrition to live, then it's okay to take small amounts of food. So that's a real change, if you will, and a different compassionate look on things from Italy.
There are a couple of things I need to say. I have to ask about this, first of all. First, rubbing my forehead, thinking, have we got to the point where there's no humanity left and we don't help people anymore? And is that why this case made it that far? I don't understand that part of it.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it's weird why it initially got to that. You know, normally, and especially with something as small as this, they'll just say, you know, naughty, naughty, go away. And that'll be the end of the story. Happens every day here in the U.K. and on the continent. For whatever reason, the supermarket wanted to pursue this. And as I say, that's pretty hefty. 6 months in jail just because you're not just, you know, you're feeling a little bit hungry. No, you're absolutely destitute and you need some food. So, it moved on to the next court and then finally appealed to the top court in the land, which has voted in favor of this individual.
And so for the next question, the question becomes the legal precedent for this. Has this high court ruling there made it okay for everybody to steal then? Is that what the fear might be?
I think that this is a kind of a nuanced, if you will, sentence. If you and I are in Rome tomorrow, and you know, we're okay. We have good clothes, and we have some money in our wallets, and we try to steal some hot dogs and cheese. They'll take us to court because we can afford to pay for it. If we are absolutely down and out, and on the final rung, they're not going to pursue you, given this precedent, as you pointed out. So it's a different animal, and it's a case by case thing. But if you're really at the end of your rope, I guess you're okay. You can take a couple of things and eat it, and that's going to be the end of the story.
Tom Rivers, ABC News correspondent, with us from the Foreign Desk in London this morning. Thank you very much.
Take care.
It is 5:57. That's our opening bell program for today. The show's producer, Mary Sandberg, our production assistant, Bennett Wakenight, and as always, our engineer is Ben Cortez.